I have seen enough. Chapter 87. Once he thought he heard her voice, as if through a thick fog. Then it was gone. Alex's escape attempt yesterday afternoon was unsuccessful, but when they'd caught him, he didn't go down without a fight. The Kazmuni traitor had questioned him for hours, but he could barely focus on account of the pain. He'd fielded one too many punches to the gut in the confrontation. Alex tried to resist the interrogation, acted like an ignorant foot soldier, and gave inconsequential information, dragging his answers out as long as he could to put off the next blow. Admitting he was Damoran now would be a death sentence. That night, when it was over, he'd almost escaped by grabbing the guard who came to feed him. The man had no keys, but the one who ran in to assist him did. Alex got them off his belt while both guards gasped and choked on the floor next to him. Nothing permanent, just enough to incapacitate them while Alex unlocked his shackles. He got 6 turns in the corridor before running full force into a boy carrying 2 buckets of water. By the time Alex scrambled to his feet, he was surrounded, and the boy cowered on the floor in front of him. He didn't resist, not wanting the boy to be hurt. This time, they put him in a room so cramped he couldn't have turned around, even if all 4 limbs weren't chained inches from the walls. Alex drifted in and out of consciousness, dreaming of Sage, until the ringed man returned, and suddenly, the only thought that had sustained him was dangerous. Because now, the questions were about her. Knowing Sage, she'd made herself valuable. She'd gotten close to the king, and could therefore be used by this man. He wanted to blame her for the king's murder, which, for all Alex knew, had already taken place.
Who is she?
Alex was blindfolded, hanging by the wrists from the ceiling, but he'd learned to sense the shift in the air just before he was struck, and he tensed.
I don't know, he cried out, when the initial wave of pain subsided. Captain Hazar never told me.
Alex still clung to his Kimisar identity, believing it was his only chance of getting out alive, his only chance of keeping her alive.
What did your commander want with her?
The pain of the shackles faded under a fresh assault.
He never said.
Alex's ribs were so bruised he could barely breathe.
I was only following orders.
Liar!
The man forced Alex's chin up.
You expect me to believe you crossed Dremshada and miles of desert on your own without knowing why?
Harsh light leaked through the underside of the blindfold, making his eyes burn.
She was incidental, he gasped.
It was hard to think of her as unimportant when she mattered more than anything to him.
I was only after the prince.
Through the pounding in his head, he realized what he'd said, but it was too late. For a moment, there was silence in the room. No movement. No breathing. Then,
what prince?
Chapter 88. The council had made no decision by the next morning. Sage was restless, studying maps of Kazmin, trying to estimate how long it would take to get home by the long way. Lani dragged her out of her room for Tashavar in the afternoon, saying Sage needed to stop brooding. The exercise helped, but only for a few hours. At dinner, Lani peppered her with questions about the marriages she'd helped arrange while apprenticing for Darnessa Rodel, the high matchmaker of Cressera. The princess cast frequent looks at her brother, no doubt beginning the process of softening him to her desire to wed Minister Cinda. Sage tried to support her friend, but stuck to political marriages. It was too painful to speak of love matches, which were more common in Damora than people thought. Her own parents had spurned the system and chosen each other, but so had Alex's, though according to official records, they were matched and wed 9 months before his birth. Late that night she returned to her maps, unwilling to go to bed until she was too tired to dream.
Mistress Sage?
She stood from where she leaned over the table and dropped her distance measuring tool.
Palandrit?
May I enter?
Of course, my king.
Baneth parted the gauzy curtains leading to the patio and stepped inside, nervously.
You are looking at maps?
Yes. Sage pointed to her charcoal marks. I was trying to determine how soon we could go home.
Are you so eager to leave?
No. Yes, Sage sighed. I feel welcome here, but it is not our home, and I want our families to know we are safe.
Baneth nodded to the map.
They will know soon enough.
Relief washed over her. The council has agreed to send us home?
No, Sage.
Baneth shook his head.
The Damorins are here.
Here?
Well, actually, they are about here.
The king pointed to a spot in northeast Kasmin, along the old trade route.
In 4 or 5 days, they will arrive at Ostiza.
Merciful spirit, that was swift. They must have realized where she and Nicholas had gone within days.
That's good, Sage tried to sound casual. How many are coming?
400 soldiers, plus an ambassador and his party.
Oh no.
That's quite a number.
Baneth tilted his head to the side and looked at her with piercing green eyes.
It makes me believe you and Nicholas are more important than you have told us.
Sage felt cold all over, despite the warm night. Palandrit.
I am not angry, Baneth said. I understand why you might not wish to say, and I owe you an apology. I have known about the Damorins for 2 days.
Does the council know?
The king nodded.
I told them after you left with Lani. It was why I did not want her to stay. She would have told you, and I wanted time to think.
How did the council think on it?
The Minister of War is not happy, as you can imagine,
Baneth said.
He is urging a military response. Others are fearful. They question your true purpose in coming here.
We were fleeing for our lives, Sage insisted. I never lied about what happened. The Damorins don't want a fight, I promise.
And I believe you.
Baneth suddenly looked nervous.
Lani and I have been discussing ways to show our people they have nothing to fear, which brings me to my reason for visiting tonight.
He held up a finger, then stepped out to the patio briefly, and returned, carrying a belt and harish, a curved Kasmuni sword.
This is for you.
Sage had wielded practice swords in Teshevar lessons, but the quality of this harish made them look like trash. Her eyes roved over the finely wrought scabbard and hilt. They were simple in decoration, and she wondered if that was in deference to her personal style. Her fingers itched to touch the weapon and test its balance, which no doubt matched its beauty. The king offered it to her with a timid smile.
It is the finest steel in Kasmun, he said. A weapon fit for royalty.
Sage's mouth was suddenly dry.
I am not royalty, Palandrit.
This I know.
He paused.
I have one for Nicholas, too. These gifts will show my trust in you.
He held it up for her to take, and Sage nearly snatched the sword from him, so eager was she to have it. She held her breath as she drew the blade out. The song of it, sliding from the scabbard, fell to a whisper once it was free. Baneth gently took the belt from her left hand and stepped back as she swung the harish experimentally. Its blade was so smooth and sharp that the air seemed to part in front of it visibly, like fabric. The balance was perfect.
Oh, she breathed.
The golden glow of the lamps reflecting off the blade made it look like it was crafted of light itself. She admired it from several angles, dimly aware of Baneth removing her belt and wrapping the new one around her waist. The difference in weight drew her attention back, and her left hand felt for where her daggers usually sat. Notches in the leather assured her there were places for them as well. She smiled shyly at Baneth. Shall we try her out tomorrow in the arena?
The expression he returned was serious. There is something I would ask you, Mistress Sage.
Yes? Sage said, distracted by the sword again.
When the Demorans depart, will you consider staying?
She lowered the sword, Baneth's words striking a strange chord within her. You wish me to stay as ambassador?
No, Sage, he whispered. I would have you stay as my queen.
Chapter 89. He did not pressure her to accept, merely stated his reasons for proposing marriage. It would protect her and make a statement to his people that the Demorans were to be welcomed. He felt she had the knowledge and wisdom to use the position wisely, and, most importantly, it would create a union between Demora and Kasmin neither nation's councils could ignore. His last words, however, shook her most.
I do not love you, Baneth said softly, and I know you do not love me.
He looked down.
I know, too, about Alex, and how your heart is broken. My heart was once broken the same way.
He had loved Queen Temosa, but she hadn't loved him. Sage took a step backward, clutching the sword against her chest. And yet, my king asks. His gaze came up again to meet hers.
I dare to think you might not wish to return to Demora, as your Alex is not there, and you can see the goodness that can come from staying.
Alex wasn't the only person she cared about in Demora. There was Claire, and the queen, and the princesses, and even Darnessa, and the extended family she'd left behind in Cressera. Yet, in a way, she'd lost them, too. King Raymond and Ambassador Gramwell would depend on her in future negotiations, not only in language, but in the friendships she'd built. By the time Sage returned to Demora, everyone else's lives would have moved on, including Claire's, and there would be no place for her. It would never feel like home again. And what of your feelings, Palandret? She managed to say. Can you enter a second marriage without love? Baneth smiled tentatively.
I admire and respect you, and I am easy in your company. I hope someday we might find affection. If nothing else, I believe we can be content with each other.
Sage could almost hear the matchmaker's voice in her ear, whispering the same. She would say this kind of match, one where many people had a vested interest in its success, often had better chances of happiness than ones made for love or passion. I will have to think, she stammered. He nodded.
It is not a decision to be made lightly, but if you accept, we should proceed at once.
He blushed a little.
I have two heirs, as well as Lani, so we need not have children, unless you wish to. You may stay in these rooms.
After the first night, she whispered hoarsely. After it is permanent. It was only ever supposed to be Alex. Baneth's flush deepened.
Yes.
Sage looked down at the weapon in her hands, suddenly afraid it bore a personal mark. The king stepped closer and pointed to a place on the hilt. It was blank, like the place on her dagger for the cue that would never be there.
I will carve my name here, but not until you agree, he said. If you do not, it is still yours to keep.
She trembled all over. I will consider all you have said. Baneth reached up to her face, framing it with his warm hands.
As my queen, there is nothing I would not give you, should you ask for it, he said.
Still no words would come, but the king seemed to understand. He leaned down and kissed her forehead.
Good night, Sage Faller.
Sage stood unmoving for several minutes after Baneth left. He wanted her to be his queen. He didn't love her, which was a relief, but she couldn't ignore what else he'd said. By all standards, it was a good match with tremendous potential. They'd enter the marriage, fully knowing it might never grow to love. But they were compatible as friends, and children were not necessary. Even Darnessa, who pulled the strings of power in marriages all across Demora, could not have plotted a better political match. Sage shut her eyes and held the Harish to her chest. Even having arranged several successful marriages during her time with the matchmaker, she'd never considered marrying a man she didn't love, and she didn't love Baneth. Yet, she was considering this.
Alex, forgive me.
And what kind of life would this be? Surely not terrible. Baneth would never misuse or mistreat her.
But Alex...
She would be Lani's sister and Reza's mother. She could have children of her own and raise them alongside Lani's, but that would be her choice.
But Alex...
Soldiers sacrificed their comfort, their time with family, and sometimes their very lives for the good of many thousands of strangers. She might not have the skills to fight for peace on the battlefield, but this she could do.
Alex, Alex, Alex.
Alex was dead. He had died for her. How could she even consider betraying him like this?
When I say over and over how I want you to be mine, it is only because I am already completely yours.
She could never love anyone like she loved him. But Alex wouldn't have wanted her to waste away, mourning and missing him so much, she might as well have died too. He had died so she could live. Her hands tightened around the hilt of the sword.
Alex, I'm yours. I am. I always will be.
The textured grip pressed painfully into her palms as she choked back a sob.
But you're gone.
Chapter 90. Sage forced Nicholas to attend to Shavar lessons the next afternoon, not wanting to be alone with Lani, who apparently had been the brains behind Baneth's proposal. She hadn't decided what to do, but with perhaps only 3 days left before the Demorans arrived, there wasn't much time left to give him an answer.
"Isn't this a girl's way of fighting?"
Nicholas complained, looking at Sage, Lani, and Princess Reza standing with their instructor, a gray-haired woman Sage had learned to fear a little bit.
"Just because women learn it does not mean it is only for them,"
said a familiar voice. Sage turned to find Darrett and the king joining them, dressed to spar. It had been only a few days since Sage had seen Darrett, though it felt much longer, and she hadn't realized how much she missed him. He smiled warmly as he clasped her right shoulder, and she returned the gesture.
"It is well to see you again, Darrett."
He smiled.
"And you, Sage. Your language is much improved."
Darrett gestured to the arena.
"I have come to see what else you have learned."
Baneth had brought the sword he'd spoken of for Nicholas and worked mostly with him, keeping a respectful distance from Sage, but not avoiding her either. She doubted he'd speak of last night, unless she did, or until the Norsari were on his doorstep.
"I did not know Demorans chopped so much wood,"
Darrett said with a wink to the king. The prince shot Sage a questioning look, and she couldn't help but smile.
"He's not being literal, Nick," she said in Demoran, using the short name that had crept into her use over the past few days. "You fight like you're chopping wood."
He scowled back.
"I fight as I was trained to fight, and I was quite good for my age, you might recall."
Baneth and Darrett were watching with patient annoyance, and she switched to Kazmuni.
"You must unlearn Demoran swordplay to master this style."
Demoran swords were longer and heavier, used for hacking, blocking, and pounding, more than slicing and deflecting. The Kazmuni Harish, complementing the fighting style of Teshevar with its speed and smoothness, often striking and then retreating back to a starting point before advancing, if advancing at all. Many movements were designed to end a fight before it truly started. The king gave her a slight nod of thanks. Nicholas's frown remained.
It works against the Khemisar. It has been many years since Kazmuni battled them. Will their style defeat them?
Sage blushed at the prince's rudeness, but Baneth only looked thoughtful.
You have a fair point, he said. And a good teacher is also a constant student, so I am not above learning what you may have to teach. Would you do me the honor of instruction?
He may have said that to please Sage, but Nicholas didn't consider the request beneath its surface. He waved the harish to emphasize its light weight.
It has been several years since I forged a blade, he said, referring to the blacksmith training all pages went through. So I would need help, but I can design and make Damorin-style swords with your permission.
Baneth brightened a little.
That may not be necessary, if Khemisar weapons are as similar as you say. We have two taken from our prisoners in the desert.
Sage waited until Baneth had instructed a servant to fetch the captured weapons before speaking. Two prisoners, Palandrit? I was only aware of the one Darrett brought with us. The king smiled a little wryly.
A second came in with the last patrol. Given how Darrett said you reacted to the first, I did not think it wise to inform you at the time. The first died on the journey from his wound.
That second man, then, was who had been chained in the cramped room. Sage waited with Baneth for the servant to return, carrying two belts and swords obviously longer and heavier than he was accustomed to. He stopped before the king and held them up. Baneth gestured for Nicholas to choose, which the prince did eagerly, opting for the slightly smaller one. The king took the second and slid it from the scabbard, stretching his arm awkwardly with the straight blade.
This will do nicely, Nicholas said, as he whipped the sword around, displaying the competence and comfort he didn't have with the harish.
But Sage's attention was focused on the weapon in Baneth's hand. She knew that sword, knew the simple but elegant design of the hilt and crossguard, knew the way it felt pressed against her ribs in stolen moments. Baneth looked impressed.
Fine balance for the weight.
He broke off as he caught sight of her.
Are you well, Sage?
A dull roar began to build in her ears.
Where did you get that sword?
She whispered. Nicholas glanced to them, and then the sword. His eyes widened. Baneth offered it to her.
Is it a design you recognize?
The roar was now deafening. Sage wrapped her fingers around the hilt and took the weight with hands that shook. The last time she'd seen this sword, Alex was holding it as he fell off his horse into a crowd of Khemisar.
Where did you get this?
She asked again, louder. She swayed a bit, and Baneth reached out ready to catch her.
The Khemisar brought in with the last patrol carried it.
Even with an arrow in his chest, Alex wouldn't have let it go easily. In her mind, she saw a man holding Alex down with a foot to his chest, making it even harder for Alex to draw his last breaths, waiting until he had no strength, no resistance, no life. Sage tore her eyes away from the sword to meet Baneth's concerned gaze.
You promised me anything I wanted, if I accepted your proposal.
His eyes widened.
I did.
The fire of emotion was suddenly stripped from her, like she'd plunged into an icy river, leaving a hollow, brittle shell. Sage raised the blade between them, making him flinch.
I want this man's head.
Chapter 91. Guards were coming, swiftly, with a purpose. Alex turned his head on the straw pallet. It had been 3 meals since the ringed man last visited, his only way of judging the passage of time. And after that interrogation, he'd been moved to a different cell, though he was too battered to appreciate it much. He dared to hope the man was done with him. The footsteps stopped outside his door, torchlight streaming through cracks. Apparently not. The door opened, and he squinted against the brightness, eyes watering. Then the light was blocked by the guard who carried the keys. Alex's arms and legs were unchained from the wall and reshackled to each other. And that's when he knew what was happening. They were taking him to his execution. Adrenaline flowed through his veins, making him awake and alert. Though everything hurt, Alex didn't think anything was broken except maybe a couple ribs. He let the guards pick him up and drag him out the door, all the while twisting and moving to loosen joints and muscles. The chains on his ankles were a hindrance, but he exaggerated their effect, hoping to lull the guards into a false sense of security. He wouldn't go without a fight.
"Where are you taking me?"
Alex demanded of each guard in turn, using it as an excuse to look around, in imitation of the wild fear he forced himself not to feel. None answered, and that fear threatened to break free when they turned away from the directions he knew led outside. A hood was yanked over his head, and Alex fought panic as the darkness closed around him. A minute later, he felt the sun on his skin, and he couldn't help thinking for a moment that he was going to die without ever having seen it again, without seeing her. But sunshine meant he was outside, which meant the best and possibly only chance he had of escaping. He would not waste it. Alex braced his feet and rammed his shoulder into the man on his right, then spun around with his hands together, swinging the dangling chain in a circle. The metal vibrated to his wrists as it hit another guard in what sounded like his head. Alex yanked the hood away and reflexively shielded his eyes against the glaring light. He was outside and in a clear area. He had a chance. A guard came at him, and Alex opened his arms and leapt to grab the man around his neck and into a hold. Keeping him upright, Alex used the leverage to kick his chained legs up at another guard, but the man he held went down, and Alex was forced to release him. He lunged for the hilt of a sword, but when he pulled, the blade was too curved to come straight out of its scabbard. In that second of hesitation, the remaining guards were on him. He fought with every ounce of strength he had, but there were too many. Something pressed on his neck, and Alex's vision dimmed, then burst with colors as his mind fought the blackness creeping in from the edges. He stopped fighting. The only thing worse than dying was dying while unconscious. The pressure eased a second before Alex would have blacked out, and his head exploded in pain as the blood was allowed to flow again. All his fresh injuries rushed into his awareness, doubling the agony.
"Sage,"
he gasped, though he couldn't put much force into his words at first.
"Sage, Fowler, I need to talk to the Demorant. Sage Fowler."
As his voice rose in pitch and volume, someone yanked his head back and pulled a gag across his mouth. Dizzy with pain, he felt a strange gratitude that her name was the last thing he'd ever be able to say. Chapter 92. Baneth watched her with his characteristic silence. Lonnie had taken Sage's side immediately, and now stood with an arm around her waist. Nicholas, however, wouldn't stop pleading for her to wait.
"Sage, you don't know why he had the captain's sword. Maybe he found it."
Sage focused on the direction they expected the man to arrive from. "He had Alex's belt, Nicholas. His belt and dagger. He stripped them from Alex's body after he killed him, or while he was dying."
"You don't know that."
"I know what I saw."
"Sage, this isn't you. Listen to me."
He grabbed her arm, and Sage shook him off. Commotion from nearby kept Nicholas from arguing further. Several guards appeared, half dragging a chained man with his head down. The only things clearly visible were his dirty prison breeches and the stubble of black hair on his head. Baneth frowned and moved to meet them.
"What happened to him?"
The Kazmuni leading the way carried a wide executioner's harish at his waist. He stopped before Baneth and bowed.
"He attempted to escape,
Palandret. We had to subdue him.
Four of the guards were visibly bruised and bleeding. The rest were disheveled and had obviously been in a fight. Banneth raised his eyebrows as they pushed the man forward, and he slumped to his knees in the dirt.
Impressive. How close did he come to escaping? Closer than I would like to admit, Palandret.
Sage couldn't get a good look through the guards around him. They maintained an alert and ready posture, though the man swayed like he would pass out any minute. Her hands tightened on the hilt of Alex's sword to steady their shaking. Will we do it here? He must have understood her, because the prisoner's body jerked and twisted at her words. The guards around him immediately moved to restrain him again, but he continued to thrash, grunts and muffled yells escaping from his gag. It took six men to pin him to the ground, and still he struggled. She wondered how he could breathe. Let's finish this, she said. Banneth shook his head.
I will give you what you ask, Sage, but he has the right to know the reason for his death. He must also have a chance to speak his last words.
Lani rolled her eyes and made a noise of disgust. I doubt this man gave Alex the same courtesy. The king looked back at her sharply.
Then that is a difference between us and them I am happy to have.
Lani opened her mouth to argue, but Sage shook her head. My king is right. Alex would have approved. When it came to mercy, however, she doubted Alex would have shown any, if he was now facing the man who had killed her. A guard went to fetch a bucket of water. Sage stared at a spot on the ground. Did she want to look him in the eyes? It felt cowardly not to face the man whose death she was demanding. But she didn't want the image of this man to pollute Alex's memory. She'd never be able to think of one without the other. I hope he begs for mercy, Lani murmured, her arm tightening around Sage. Sage glanced at the man through bodies holding him down. Soon his blood would stain the sand, and his body would rot in the criminal's graveyard outside the city. Wild dogs would dig up his bones and devour what the desert did not. He deserved it. Yet somehow, the thought did not bring her peace. The water arrived, and the guards rolled the man over. He didn't resist. Sage wondered if he was still conscious. Derrett squatted next to the prisoner and poured a dipper over his blood and dirt-covered face. Wait, said Banneth, coming forward.
Why is this man so damaged?
The king pointed to the prisoner's torso, which was visible where his shirt had come up. The exposed skin was almost completely covered in bruises.
He had attempted escape twice before, Palandret.
The men moved, so Banneth could see better.
I have a hard time believing all this was necessary, the king said, shaking his head.
What does it matter, brother? This man is about to die, snapped Lani.
It matters a great deal if this happened in my prison.
Banneth crouched and lifted the shirt higher to trace a raw mark across the man's ribcage. He stood, looking angry.
I must find out who has done this.
Derrett used a wet scrap of cloth to wipe the man's face.
We will have to ask him and investigate.
More delay, Lani stomped her foot. Can't you see how this hurts, Sage? Derrett sat back suddenly.
Palandret, I know this man.
He looked up at Sage.
He was with you in the desert when I was taken. He is Damoran.
Nicholas knelt beside Derrett to look. Bleeding hell, Sage. Is Derrett right? Sage took a step toward them, trying to understand how that was possible. Is he a Norsari? Do you know him?
I can't.
The prince was shaking his head, unable to find words even in Damoran.
It's not possible. It's not.
He leapt to his feet and met her as she came closer.
Sage. Oh, my spirit.
He grabbed her shirt and shook her.
Who is it, Nick?
Sage twisted around him to see.
It's Captain Quinn.
Chapter 93.
She couldn't stop staring at him, even hours later. Alex's head rested on a cushion at one end of the bath, while the rest of him floated just below the surface. Rather than rub his bruises and lacerations with salves, the Kazmuni healers had put the curatives in the water to soak into his wounds and skin. Sage cleaned dirt and blood from Alex's face as gently as she could, and treated what wasn't underwater. Even heavily dosed with pain medicines, he'd flinched away when anyone but Sage touched him. Baneth watched from the opposite side of the bath.
"I am more sorry than I can express, Sage," he said.
"I know," she whispered.
"He did not tell us he was Damoran. Why would he not do that?"
Sage had been mulling over that for the last 3 hours. "I think he was worried Darrett would recognize him, and you would be angry for what he'd done." She looked across the water at the king, though it's difficult to imagine him being treated worse.
"Again, I am sorry," the king sighed. "But you are right, and my anger and mistrust would have fallen on you as well, once I knew what he was to you."
Perhaps he was afraid of that, too. It was easy to imagine Alex enduring imprisonment to protect her from his association, especially if he'd been able to see that she was safe. Around midnight, the healers moved Alex to Sage's bed, where they bandaged what they could. Once again, Sage was the only one who seemed to be able to touch him without causing pain. Fortunately, none of the cuts or abrasions were very deep, and other than the ones from his last-minute escape attempt, his injuries were a few days old and healing on their own. His shaved hair made the wounds easier to clean as well. The bruising would be more difficult to recover from. Almost his entire torso was mottled with blue and purple, including clusters of 3 round marks in a row. She'd have to force Alex to move around when he woke. Darrett knocked and entered.
"It is done," he said. "Gizpan Brazko is dead."
That was the name Alex had been listed under in the prison, and Baneth had decided everyone should believe he'd been killed in an escape attempt. Those who knew better, Lonnie, Nicholas, Darrett, the healers, and the guards present at the time, had been sworn to secrecy until Alex's torture could be investigated. Lonnie had grumbled that she couldn't tell Minister Cinda, but the king insisted the perpetrator would be easier to find if he didn't know he was being hunted. Baneth nodded his thanks to Darrett.
"We will start first thing in the morning."
"What about what he said?" asked Sage. When Alex had been unbound, he'd babbled about the king and an assassination. He'd only calmed down when Sage assured him Baneth was alive and well. Then the pain medicines had taken over, rendering Alex unconscious and leaving them to speculate over his words. "He said there were Dolophon in the prison." Darrett shook his head.
"The manifest has no such prisoners listed."
"But they are there," Sage insisted. "I've seen them. 2 men in an otherwise empty cell block. They've been there for weeks." She didn't want to think about how she hadn't looked close enough to see the 3rd Kimisar prisoner was Alex. It was her fault they hadn't found him sooner.
"I will look again in the morning, but if they are in the prison, that is the best place for them."
Baneth nodded.
"And we cannot keep Alex in this state."
He stood and stretched, then addressed the healer in the corner of the room.
"I will get some rest. You will send for me as soon as he wakes."
"Yes, Palandret." Both Baneth and Darrett left, and a few minutes later, the healer was dozing in the corner, effectively leaving Sage alone. She sat on the bed and took Alex's hand in hers. After weeks of imagining him cold and lifeless, it was a miracle to feel his warmth now. He was alive. He'd come for her. After everything she'd done, he'd still come for her. She stroked his hand, wanting to kiss him more than anything, but too scared to touch his battered face. Pink tinged the eastern sky,
when Alex's eyes suddenly opened.
Hello.
Sage's head jerked up. He smiled and blinked lazily, still dazed from drugs they'd given him. All the emotions of yesterday came crashing over her, and her eyes flooded with tears. He frowned.
You're crying again. Why are you crying?
I thought you were dead, Alex. She wiped her cheeks with her sleeve, but the tears kept coming. I thought I'd never see you again.
Well, here I am, he said,
his face relaxing back into a half-smile. And look at you, she sniffed. What did they do to you?
Some of it I deserved, he said, wincing as he stretched his cheeks and mouth. I thought I was on my way to an execution, so I put up a fight.
Sage choked back a sob. You were. They showed me your sword and said a prisoner had it. I thought he'd taken it from you after he... After he... She stopped, panic threatening to take her at the thought of what she'd almost done.
And you demanded my execution.
Alex's shoulders shook in quiet laughter, some of the fog clearing from his eyes.
Promise me you'll never change, Sage.
His reaction only made her cry harder.
How can you laugh about that?
Because it didn't happen. Everything is funny when you've just cheated death.
That wasn't the only thing that hadn't happened. Sage put her hand over his heart.
I saw the arrow, she whispered. It knocked you off your horse. How on earth did you survive that?
Alex looked puzzled for a moment. Then he placed his hand over hers.
I saw the archer and dove down. The arrow hit under my arm, lodged in my jacket. Didn't even nick me.
He squeezed her hand gently.
I had no idea you saw that. I'm so sorry you suffered all that time.
I deserved it, she said, pulling her hand back. I lied to you and defied you in front of everyone.
He shook his head slowly.
You did the right thing when I was wrong. You stopped a war I nearly started.
Alex glanced pointedly around the room.
Apparently, you've gained the trust of the Kazmuni royal family, and you kept Nicholas safe.
He paused, looking guilty.
He is safe, right?
Of course.
Sage gripped the bedclothes with tense white fingers.
But none of that makes up for what I did to you. I was too stubborn and wrapped up in myself to see beyond what I wanted.
You seem to have forgotten that I was acting like an ass, and that's putting it mildly.
Alex closed his eyes and took a deep breath.
Sage, what I went through back at Tegan, when I thought I'd have to choose between...
I know. Cass told me.
I should have told you.
He exhaled heavily, and when he reopened his eyes, they were bright with tears.
But that's why I was so afraid to have you with me. If it's a choice between you and everyone else, it's you.
Alex's bandaged arm shook a little as he raised it to touch her cheek.
It's always you.
And I only made it worse, she insisted,
though she leaned into his caress.
I took your worst fear and made it real.
Are we going to fight now about who was at fault?
His hand dropped to her neck, and he slipped trembling fingers into her cropped hair.
I'd just as soon never ever argue with you again. You can choose my meals and underclothes for the rest of my life, and I'll never complain.
I'll hold you to that.
Sage laughed as she wiped the last of her tears away, then put her left hand on his chest again, reveling in the strong pulse beneath her fingers. All traces of the pain medicine had left his eyes, leaving them clear and bright.
He was here. He was alive. He was hers. I love you, she whispered.
That, he said,
pulling her down to him for a deep kiss,
is the best thing I've heard in months.
Chapter 94. Alex could have kissed her all day, but at some point, The sound of someone clearing his throat made her look away. The Kazmuni king stood in the doorway to what looked like a garden, averting his eyes politely. Sage helped Alex sit up and propped pillows behind him, but just the effort of being upright was exhausting after a few minutes. His mind was clear, though. Before the Kazmuni king could ask any questions, Alex thanked him for taking care of Sage and Nicholas.
"You saved their lives," he said in Kimisar. "For that, I will be forever in your debt."
"Perhaps you can repay it by explaining what you said yesterday," said the king. "But first things first." He deliberately picked up a chalice from the table by the bed. After drinking from it, he offered it to Alex. Sage had told him the king would do this, and it was important. His arms trembled from even holding the cup, but Alex took a sip and handed it back.
"Now," said Baneth, "you must tell us all that has happened."
Alex started with events the king already knew of, in hopes of establishing himself as honest. When he described his first escape attempt in the prison, Sage sat up straight on the edge of the bed, eyes wide.
"Did you see the man enough to recognize him?" asked Baneth.
"I only saw him that once. After that, my eyes were covered," Alex answered. "But I feel if I saw him again, I would know it."
The king shook his head as he paced the room.
"He might be only a middleman. That could lead nowhere, but we will investigate."
He stopped in a patch of golden sunlight.
"What did he want to know from you?"
"He wanted to know about Demora and Sage and Nicholas. I think he wanted to blame them for your assassination."
Baneth frowned.
"That makes little sense. This plot was in the making long before I met Sage and Nicholas.
From what I heard, it was a change of plans, a target of opportunity," said Alex.
"Was there anyone on the council who was hostile to them?"
"Only about 3/4 of them, the most outspoken being the Minister of War. But his job is to be suspicious of foreigners."
Sage had still said nothing, but Alex could tell she was frantically trying to work something out.
"Maybe we can reverse the line of thought," suggested Alex. "Who could have been the original enemy to blame?"
"Are there any councils without power struggles?"
Baneth shook his head.
"The Minister of Roads hates the Minister of Trade, and the Minister of War hates the Minister of Finance. The Chamberlain hates everyone."
The king went back to pacing. Alex took a deep breath and winced.
"All right. Who stands to gain from your death? Who inherits the throne?"
"My son, Haseth, who is nearly 11.
Alex felt he was on the right track.
"That's too young. Who would be appointed regent?"
"Traditionally, it is the Minister of War, who is often the brother of the king, and therefore, the heir's uncle."
Baneth stopped and gazed into the garden thoughtfully.
"But my sister also has claim. Lani is of age and rules when I am gone. She is also popular with the people."
That was the third time the Minister of War had been mentioned.
"Who is the War Minister's enemy again?" asked Alex.
"Minister Cinda," said Sage, her face pale.
Baneth nodded.
"Yes, that is a good lead. The finance minister has been supportive of opening talks with Demora. He and General Caladan have been at odds for years."
"No," she said. "I mean, Minister Cinda is the traitor."
The king stared at her.
"Dev Cinda has been your biggest champion since your arrival."
Sage looked like she wanted to cry. "I know. But it all makes perfect sense."
Chapter 95.
She hadn't wanted to believe it when Alex described hitting the man with his chains as he tried to escape. Dev Cinda had a wound like that, but it could have been from subduing Alex, as Lani had bragged. Sage didn't want to jump to conclusions, especially since Cinda had been openly supportive of the king, Lani, and the Demorans. For spirit's sake, he'd gotten Lani into council meetings and given her more power. But that had given him tremendous influence over Lani. The princess may have been old enough and have the right relationship to Haseth to be appointed regent, but if Cinda married her, he had significant claim to both Minister of War and regent. Framing General Caladan would make his post vacant and ripe for Cinda to step into as the young king's uncle. If Lani's youth and relative inexperience were considered an impediment to being named regent, her husband was an alternative she might not object to. Even if he was somehow excluded from both offices, Cinda could still wield power through his wife. However, Lani had said Caladan, or General Pigface as she called him, was planning to resign. Cinda didn't need to get the Minister of War out of the way anymore, but his retirement would almost certainly be delayed by dealing with the approaching Damoran force. If Cinda uncovered Sage's and Nicholas's guilt in Banneth's murder, he could use it to ensure the resignation of the military commander who'd let it happen under his nose and line himself up to succeed the general. Additionally, the princess would be heartbroken at Sage's betrayal and depend on Cinda even more. The third piece had been the absence of the Khemisar Dolophon in the prison records. Minister Cinda audited the prison accounts weekly, according to Lani. He had every opportunity to erase their official existence, not to mention access to treasury funds for bribing anyone who saw too much. When he heard about Alex, Cinda saw him as a goldmine of information he could use to undermine and frame the Damorans. Banneth wasn't convinced. You said Khemisara would do this in exchange for passage through the mountains to attack Damora, he said to Alex. Only the Minister of War or the King could give the order for the garrison at the pass to stand down. That implicates General Caladan. Unless that was also arranged to frame him, said Sage. Cinda could forge the order to make it look like Caladan had issued it. If he's bribing prison guards, he can pay the right people to have it done. If he's bribing prison guards. The king sighed and rubbed his forehead. I can't decide whether you are trying to grasp at sand or if I am. Everything is circumstantial. I would recognize him if I saw or heard him, said Alex. It doesn't matter if I believe you. I can't arrest a high-ranking council member over an assassination that hasn't been attempted on the word of a foreign prisoner, said Banneth. I need proof. We may get some from the Dolophon when Darrett finds them, said Sage. But perhaps we can find some detail Cinda knows but should not. She looked to Alex. When you were questioned, what did you tell him? I told him about Nicholas. Alex's face had gone parchment white under his bruises. Her eyes widened and darted to the king. I never told anyone who he is. I think you should tell me now, said Banneth, folding his arms. Sage held Alex's gaze for a few heartbeats and took a deep breath. Nicholas is a prince. He is the youngest son of the King of Damora. I see. Banneth drew his brows down. What does that make you? I am a tutor for the royal children. Nothing more. The king turned his green eyes on Alex. Is she speaking the truth? In a strict sense, Alex admitted. He smiled at her lopsidedly. But she is everything to me. Sage rolled her eyes as she blushed. Banneth sighed. Very well. If we can get Cinda to admit he knows this, as well as a confession from the Dolophon, that will be proof enough. What about Princess Lani? Sage said. We can't let this surprise her. You say she's in love with Cinda. Banneth shook his head. If you had difficulty convincing me, and I am still not fully convinced, imagine how she will react. It will be a shock, no matter when she learns. Sage wouldn't budge. The longer you wait to tell her, the more humiliating this will be, and the more public. If you leave her out, she will never trust you again. But most importantly, she deserves to know.
Alex didn't hesitate. I agree with Sage. You don't even know my sister, said Baneth. It doesn't matter, said Alex. She deserves to know.
Lonnie didn't want to hear it. She screamed at Alex and threw vases at the wall.
Baneth was silent, waiting for his sister's rage to run its course.
When Lonnie finally collapsed on the floor, weeping, the king knelt by her and took her in his arms.
The betrayal is worse for you, he said. I know your heart is broken.
I don't believe it, Lonnie sobbed. He could not do this. I don't care what they say.
She looked up with eyes as green as Baneth's.
Prove it, Sage, if you can.
Sage glanced to Alex, who'd watched most of the conversation without understanding what was said.
Come here, then, she said to Lonnie.
The princess stood and strode to Alex's bedside as Sage lifted his shirt to expose his chest. She pointed to the lines of three bruises all over his body, and Alex winced as he rolled to his side to show more on his back.
Who wears rings that would do this, Lonnie? Sage asked quietly.
Lonnie spun around and ran for the patio, but Baneth caught her arm.
You will not leave this room, Alania.
He was going to ask you for my hand tonight, Banna, Lonnie cried, fresh tears falling down her red cheeks. Today was supposed to be the happiest day of my life yet.
Then nothing has happened that cannot be undone, he soothed.
Lonnie looked at Sage then.
Baneth was wrong. Sage went to her friend and wrapped her arms around her. Lonnie had always seemed taller than Sage, so overwhelming was her presence. But now Sage realized they were the same height.
I thought I had something real, Lonnie whispered.
Someday you will have it, Lonnie, Sage whispered back. I promise.
After a few minutes, Lonnie pulled herself together and turned back to Baneth and Alex.
What do we do now to prove this to the council?
We bring the Dolophon to them, said Baneth. In their questioning, we try to get Cinda to admit what he knows. If he fails, we will reveal Alex. But his words could be turned against all the Demorans, so that will be a last resort.
Will it be enough? Lonnie asked.
It doesn't matter, said a voice.
Everyone turned to face Darrett, who stood in the doorway to Nicholas's room.
The Dolophon are gone.
Chapter 96. All things considered, Alex thought Baneth took the news that two assassins were loose in the palace rather well.
We know their plan, the king said, switching back to Kimisar for Alex's benefit. That means we are ahead.
Yes, but catching them in action only catches them, said Lonnie.
The princess's Kimisar wasn't quite as good as everyone else's.
I think confession unlikely.
Then perhaps we should make Cinda think he has succeeded, said Sage. See how he acts and who he blames.
She looked to Baneth.
What would be the first steps after the murder of a king?
Besides shutting down the palace and searching for the culprit? The council would be called into session to declare the new ruler.
How soon? She asked.
As soon as the death is discovered.
Even in the middle of the night?
Baneth nodded.
Even so, but I would think there would be no reason for my body to be discovered until morning.
Sage bit her lip.
He will be prepared for that timing, so I say you should be found in the middle of the night. It gives us a slight advantage.
Agreed, but how do we do that? Have the guards hear a disturbance and investigate?
Sage gave the king an odd look. Perhaps I can discover it. That will play right into his hands. It could make him overconfident.
Baneth threw a furtive glance at Alex before replying to her in Kazmuni. She nodded,
turning pink.
Just a damn minute, Sage, interrupted Alex in Damoran.
A horrible suspicion was growing in his gut.
Why would you be in the king?